Welcome back, guys, to another edition of Down to the Wire. It is Cam back for another episode. Happy New Year to everybody. Hope you had a good New Year, good Christmas, good time with the fam that you spent, and obviously watching good football and sports in general, because the holiday season is a great time to watch sports. Isn't that right, Mason?
Of course it is. And you know what? We need to apologize right here really quick, because unfortunately our curse struck again with the Wolverines this weekend.
Yeah, we just can't help ourselves, I guess. Like, I don't know what it is, but we just have these curses that, you know, we just, you know, crown somebody and then, you know, it just doesn't work out immediately. It doesn't work out. It's not like one of these things where, like, you know, we kind of call it and then maybe some weeks down the road it kind of blows up. No, it was immediate. But before we get into college football, Mason, let's talk a little bit of the NBA. NBA season has officially started now that it's after Christmas. So now you can actually care about it and care about college basketball too. But give us some updates on how the NBA is shaping out. I know the Pelly Pels have been playing well. They've been in and out of first place a lot recently. So we got that. And of course, your Celtics are first in the East. So, you know, I'm sure you're having a great time.
We have been camped out at first place in the East for a hot minute. So that's been nice. I will say, though, the Celtics have cooled off a little bit. Like, they were super hot to start off. But I will say the hottest team in the NBA right now is surprisingly the Brooklyn Nets. They're on a 12-game winning streak. And KD is playing insane right now. So that's been crazy to watch. And I mean, honestly, like, the biggest thing right now in the NBA to me right now is just the individual performances that you're getting night in and night out. Like, a couple of weeks ago, I talked about it, how Jokic had a 40 and 20 triple double. And then about three games after that, Luka had a 60 and 10 triple double. And he just went crazy. And then last night was a big one to me. Donovan Mitchell put up 71 points on the Bulls.
Unreal, dude.
I gotta be honest, I was not expecting anything close to that ever again since Kobe did it to the Raptors when he put up 83 or whatever it was on them. But 71, man, that's insane. And to top it off, he had 11 assists. So he totaled 99 points or something like that for the entire game, which is just, man, that's insane. I just was never expecting
that. How does
that
happen in the NBA?
Like, I don't know, legitimately, man. Something's happening right now with the NBA. There's just such an influx of talent. And it's been a lot of fun to watch, because even like the teams that are at the bottom of the league, like the Magic and like the Rockets, besides the Lakers, but like there's just such an influx of talent right now that every given night, like, you got to bring your best. You actually got to play hard against some of these crappy teams, because they still have really good players that are going to put up points on you. So
yeah, I know the other night is in good shape right now. Pelham put up what, like, 7 or 8 threes or something, which is a franchise record for the Pels. Like, insane.
And hey, you got to be feeling good right now, because the West is wide open.
Yeah, dude, feeling good. Haven't really watched much because, you know, they're never on where I am.
Yeah.
Because, you know, blackouts are stupid. This is my complaint about all pro sports and how they do their stupid TV stuff, where you can never really watch the game you really want to watch unless you want to pay like $100 a month for like little league pass thing. It's so stupid.
Awesome,
I don't care that much to pay for league pass. I just want to watch my team. I don't want to pay $100 just to watch maybe a game here or there. Okay, just let me watch my team. And the same thing goes for the MLB too. I want to go and watch the Braves. You know, I see they're on TV as I'm looking through the guide, and I go on it, and guess what I get? This program's been blocked out in your area. What do you freaking mean it's blocked out? Like, what the heck? Don't you want your local people to actually watch your product? Like, what is this, man?
It's all a money grab right now.
But so stupid.
They've got me hooked, if that makes you feel any better. I definitely locked in on
League
Pass.
They've had you hooked the whole time.
Oh, for sure. But yeah, right now the Pelicans being the 3 seed, like, honestly, the West is so wide open right now, especially with Golden State being injured right now. It's going to be a dogfight to the end. Because, I mean, right now Golden State is your 9 seed. So that's play-in game. They're probably going to be, my guess would be they'll jump up to 6. So that would be a 3-6 matchup right now if that's how it ended.
Pels and Golden State in round one, dude, that would be fun, man.
That's brutal. But
listen, yeah, I just want to see Zion dunk all over Draymond. Okay, we can just like play that. Like that's fine.
But I mean, we got All Star break coming up.
Valanciunas so. Like go and fight him. Like
that would be that great. Too. See, my guy heard about him. Herb will take him.
So how are rookies and how does the MVP race looking like right now, Mason?
Unfortunately, the MVP race just kind of flip-flops every night. Whoever, it's like, I'm sure it's Donovan Mitchell now.
Donovan Mitchell, easy. MVP right now, 71 points. But
honestly, it's been kind of flipping between Jokic, Luka, and Tatum. Those have kind of been the top three, and it's just whoever's playing better at the time is taking over number one. So I think right now Jokic is the betting favorite with Vegas, and I think it goes Jokic, Luka, and then Tatum. So that's been interesting. I would love for Tatum to get the MVP. Really? That would be awesome. I have no idea. But the thing that surprises me right now is the fact that Luka has been so hot. Like, his numbers have been insane lately, but they're 6 games over .500 right now, fourth in the West. So yeah, they're starting to come on. But I mean, like, honestly, I would say that Jokic is the favorite right now, and I would have to give him the MVP, which would be crazy because that would be his third straight.
It's crazy, man. Absolutely. He's awesome.
I love watching him. He just looks like a giant Pillsbury Doughboy, and then he's smacking everybody.
That's hilarious. So you mentioned, of course, that the West is wide open. If you had playoffs start today, who do you think would make it out of the West?
I'd have to go with Denver.
Finally, sorry. Denver. They don't choke it away like they do every year.
So the thing about it is for the past couple of years, they've been injured through the playoffs, and they haven't quite had the right team around Jokic. This year, they've got pretty much every piece that you would need and want around Jokic, which with Aaron Gordon and Bruce Brown, like both of those guys are cutting to the basket. They're getting open shots. They're helping him out. But you also have Michael Porter Jr., who's able to get Jokic some open looks. He's able to knock down threes on top of it with the insane passes that Jokic is getting to him. And then you also have your second star, which is Jamal Murray. And he started off pretty slow just because he was coming back from ACL injury. But now lately, he's been starting to pick it up a little bit. And honestly, I would say by playoff times, he's going to be kind of in his groove and they'll be playing really well together. So I would go with them. After that, I mean, shoot. It's wide open after that, honestly, because Memphis, they're playing good right now, but I don't know if the way that Memphis plays, they can get through playoff, get to the finals on a crazy playoff run. I mean, same thing with New Orleans. Zion just went down with a hamstring injury. They're saying he's going to be out for 3 weeks. I don't know if you knew that or not. So that might hurt them a little bit. And I mean, you still have Phoenix. They're the 8 seed right now, which is crazy. And like I was saying with Golden State's still a 9 seed. So it's just wide open right now in the West.
Well, it'll be a super exciting time once it gets close to trade deadline, I'm sure, with all the moves that will probably want to take place. KD is apparently happy at the Nets and doesn't want to leave, or did they just shut that up? Look, it's like, hey, you're staying
A 12-game win streak will do that for you. Winning cures all.
Winning cures all, yeah. Until they go on like a 15-game losing streak, then, you know, Kyrie will be nowhere to be found. And then KD will be like, I want to be traded. And then they'll be like, no, we're not going to trade you. And then it's going to be great. It'll be all over SportsCenter. All right, well, that's our NBA talk. We'll probably talk a little bit more and be a little bit more focused NBA moving forward, since we are basically, unfortunately, at the end of the college football season. So get ready. Mason's going to be basically leading our show here during the college football offseason, because he's the NBA guru over here. He knows all, okay? Do not question. Anyway. Yeah. So with that, let's go ahead and get to college football, man. Bowl season was rough for you in our picks. Really, really bad. You ended up going 6-15 in our bowl pick'em. And so that ended your season at 62-72. and 5. Really, really, really rough time there for you, dude. And because of how poorly you did, you have choked away the 2-game lead that you had on me all season. And your champion of the college football pick 'em this year is yours truly, as I went 13-8, really solid for me. Out of all the games that you and I were different, there was only one that I was wrong on. And that was, which one was that? Oh, that was Mississippi State, Illinois. All the other ones, I was right. So I felt actually really good about it. And so I went 13-8 and ended up 500 on the year. We came even, Mason. If we bet money, I wouldn't have lost anything, but also wouldn't have made any money either. So whether you want to view that as success, I will let you decide. But I went 67-5 for the year. And listen, one more to go. So maybe we can come out positive here if I can pick a winner for the Natty, right? But we'll find out here in about a week. But Mason, talk to me about bowl season. It's really funny as you're like sitting here and watching the Bulls, like all these commentators and everything, and you know, they see like all these players that are like super into the game and celebrating everything. They always have the saying, and people say bowl games don't matter and blah, blah, blah. It's like, whatever, man. Like, shut
they
up.
Don't.
Nobody cares about the Rogue Quest Bowl. Okay. Just go look at the stats. Yeah. Like, nobody actually cares. It's great that the kids are having fun because you're playing football, so it's always going to be fun, but that doesn't mean that, you know, it doesn't actually matter. So to the fans, at least. Anyways, talk to me about bowl season, dude.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun so far. Honestly, one of my favorite games so far is your South Carolina Gamecocks against my Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
Who you turned on?
Yeah. But look, that game was a lot of fun, man. So that one was a blast. Tennessee Clemson was a good game. And honestly, like, it was just a lot of fun actually watching Alabama come out and perform against a good team. So then smacking Kansas State was great.
Yeah, let's talk about that one. Okay. It was really funny. I was sitting here and I was like, you know, it went the first quarter and Kansas State is kind of rolling, you know. I was like, oh man, we might actually have like a really good game. And then Kansas State from then on out did everything that you can't do against Nick Saban. Okay. And it's like, hey, man, like, good for you guys. You had a really fun first quarter and then just pooped it all away. Like, you can't listen. You either take your points or you actually make an easy throw to a guy that's going to be a touchdown. So since you didn't get it, you give Alabama the ball, you know, the 2-yard line or whatever. Just go to half. Just be happy. Just be happy. But no, they decide to be morons and they decide to call a timeout when Bama was probably just going to run off the clock.
Yep.
And that's it. And you know what? Bama gets the ball the second half. You know what is like? It's like classic Alabama. This is how they blow out these teams. This is how they win all these games. It's because they always get the 2-for-1s. Every yeah. single time. They always get the ball to end the first half and score. That way they're up a touchdown. And then they get the ball to start the second half and score. And then the game's basically over because all they need is one stop. They always get their one stop and then they score again. It's 3 touchdowns. The game's over. That's exactly how it went to perfection. And as soon as Kansas State called a timeout, as I'm sitting here on the couch watching it, I'm just thinking in my mind is like, you idiot. What are you thinking? Be happy with yourself, okay? You're not going to get the ball back. And even if you do, you're going to get it back with what, maybe 30 seconds? And you're not driving down the field on them. You're just not. Like, just be happy. But no, he calls the timeout. And then Nick Saban's like, all right, well, F you. We're going down the field and we're going to score. And that's exactly what they did. Bryce Young became Bryce Young again. And they marched down the field and scored. And they got the ball and they scored. They got their one stop they needed. And then, boom, it's over.
That's so okay. That whole thing is one of my favorite things about the Nick Saban experience. And honestly, it's probably the most underrated thing is that he's just always in the other coach's head for some reason, because they always think, okay, we have to score as many points as we can get. We have to go for every fourth down that we can get. And it's always an onside kick. And it's always an onside kick when you're expecting it. I don't think there was a person in the world that wasn't expecting an onside kick coming out of halftime out of Kansas State just because of the score. And like, so it happened with Kansas State. It always happens with Lane Kiffin. It's just like, for some reason, he's in coaches' heads. And it's a lot of fun to watch because you can see the panic they start going for it on fourth down every time, and then it's always an onside kick just coming out of nowhere. So it's an enjoyable experience.
Just like, be smart, okay? Just like, don't give the game away by these stupid decisions. But like, he just gets in their head, man. Just like all the players are apparently, it's like this thing. It's like everybody talks about all the players are scared, like kind of what Mike Leach, RIP, you know, talked about after the Mississippi State Bama game this year. You know, all the players are scared of the uniforms.
Yeah.
Like that's how it's been for a long time. Maybe not as much anymore, but it definitely was like heyday, like in between 2010 and 2020. It was definitely that way, like that stretch. And so, but now it's like, no, instead of the players, it's the freaking head coaches that are like, forgot what you actually need to do to put a competitive game out there. That's how, like, that was the thing with Kirby, man. Like before Georgia got over the hump last year, Kirby would do all these idiotic, like fake punts and fake field goals and all this crap that then destroys him. Like he has all the momentum and then does something like that and then he loses. It's like, dude, just like just be normal, please. Like just coach a regular game, and if you lose, you lose. Okay,
and that's exactly what Lane Kiffin is right now. Lane Kiffin goes for it just about on every single fourth down that he can get against Alabama, and he kills the team immediately. Like in 5 minutes into the first quarter, the game's pretty much over just because he wants to go for every fourth down.
But hey, the Bryce Young era is officially over, Mason. How do you feel about Bryce Young and Will Anderson being gone?
I definitely sat and took a 30-minute depression shower after the game was over. So that was a little sad. I really wanted to cry my eyes out. I'm going to miss him so much. But yeah, man, it was a lot of fun having Bryce Young and Will Anderson. They didn't necessarily win the big ones as much as you would have liked, but they made it enjoyable. And the leadership that they showed by actually coming out and playing in the bowl game, it just kind of like capped off the experience that I had as a fan for them. Like they instantly became two of my favorite players. So I can't wait to see what they're going to do on Sundays. Hopefully they both go 1 and 2 in the draft. That'd be pretty cool too. But yeah, I mean, I don't think we're ever going to have two other guys like them. So it's been a fun ride.
Two generational players, two top five picks, and no natties to show for it.
One natty actually. They didn't start, but
they don't count. That doesn't count, Mason.
That counts.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't count. They have a ring on their finger. They did not win a natty as the guys on the team.
They have a ring on their finger. It counts.
It doesn't count. And it was also the COVID year, so that also really doesn't count either. So
it really doesn't
at all.
A lot more difficult.
You're hilarious. You are hilarious. A lot more difficult, my butt. Anyways,
not as much time with your teammates, coaches. Seems a little more difficult.
No. Anyways, so those two are over, and now you're gonna have to live with, you know, that little fact. But hey, it's fine. You have, you know, Milroe as your quarterback for next year. Maybe
Ty Simpson, baby.
Maybe we'll see. We'll see how it goes. So here's what I will say. It was really nice to see Bryce and Will play in the bowl game. And honestly, I think I've probably noticed it more this year than I have in years past, where whether it be players or even coaches speaking out more against opt-outs. Even Brian Kelly in his pregame press conferences before the bowl game was like, hey, like, you know, I want players here. There's more value to you playing these games than prepping for your 40 time and all this kind of stuff. Like giving out, like, you know, obviously he's the coach and he's saying, hey, like, yeah, we support these guys and all blah, blah, blah. But then he's giving like his real honest opinions, like, hey, like it's worth more you playing than it is sitting out just for like a 40 time, like be part of the team. You made a commitment, all this stuff. And then you see Bryce Young and Will Anderson and there are a lot of other players on other teams that either is coming back that usually go to the draft or decide to play and all this stuff. So it seems to maybe be a trend and maybe the opt-out thing isn't going to be as bad. And this has nothing to do with even the playoff, but maybe it's maybe the players are starting to be like, hey, I just want to play, or I don't know. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I think I noticed it more in the bigger games than some of the smaller games. But I think with the 12-team playoff coming, that's obviously going to take away a lot of the opt-outs. But I do agree, like, I think everybody's been saying that for a while now, that it's going to help you more in the long run if you're actually out there playing than just, like, sitting on the sideline trying to get your 40 time better. But, yeah, I did notice it a lot more this year. I think there were a couple more. I think USC had two guys that didn't opt out that I was a little surprised. I don't remember who they are.
Well, I mean, Caleb Williams played, and he had to deal with a hamstring injury, which are no joke. I mean, he looked fine, but even still, like, a lot of people in his position would probably sit out. And that would be a good excuse to sit out, you know? Like, hey, you have a hammy, like, go sit out, you know? But no, he made sure that he did all the rehab. After all the media crap that he had to do with Winnie Leisman, like, he made sure that he took the time to rehab to make sure that he played, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I want guys out there playing for sure in bowl games, because like you said earlier, like, the bowl games, they're different now than they were, obviously, since the playoffs have started. But the big games are still pretty exciting and fun to watch. And when guys are just going out there and opting out and not playing, or they're going out there and not playing as hard as they can and just, like, taking it easy, like, it does take away some of the thrill from the game. So it's been nice to see guys going out there and actually playing.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say this, like, any player that's opting out, if you want to opt out, you're not on the sideline with us. You're going to go be up in the stands. Like, and I saw a lot more of, hey, the players that opted out were on the sidelines with the team. Like, no, man, like, you opted out, you're out of here. Like, we love you. We appreciate you. You can still use our stuff. You can still come hang. But when it's game time, like, we don't want you here. You decided not to be a part of the team. You can go be up in the stands if you want to watch the game. Because, like, man, if we're losing a bowl game and I look over at you and you're just in street clothes, laughing it up, hanging out, and you're like, you know, Bijan Robinson, you're like our best player, and we could have really used you, and instead you decided to opt out. Like, I don't want you near, if I'm a coach, I don't want you near the players. Like, I just don't. I just don't understand that. And it seemed to happen. It seemed to be more like the normal thing where a lot of these opted out players are, you know, on the sidelines with the teams. I'm just like, I just don't understand it, man. Like, if you want to opt out, then, like, go opt out. Go be in California to do your 40 time stuff. Go hang out with your friends, go do media, go sit in the stands in a suite or something. Like, go do that. But, like, you're not here with us because you decided not to be with us.
I think the weird one is the transfers, because there was a couple, you know, at least Trayshawn Holden was on the, I don't know if he was on the sidelines for the entire game, but he was definitely in the locker room after the game celebrating with the Alabama team, which was a little surprising to me, because you already transferred, you've already committed to Oregon, and you're celebrating in the locker room after the game. Like, come on, dude. What are we doing?
That's a weird one. I'm surprised Nick let that slide, dude.
Yeah, me too. But he's getting a little soft.
He is getting soft, and it's going to be the downfall of him, man. He's too soft. Yeah. He's getting too soft.
Still the GOAT. Still the GOAT.
No one's saying he's not, but you can still be the GOAT and start losing some steps here. Any other games you kind of want to talk about before we get into the semis?
USC choking it away. That one kind of sucked.
We were kind of talking before we started recording, and I honestly hardly watched the game at all. I was kind of watching it in the second half because, you know, Tulane and the USC were kind of going back and forth. And then USC got up like two scores. It was like 45 to 31 or something. So whenever I saw that, like, it was going at the same time as the LSU game, which we skull drug JV Purdue. It was amazing. it was great. But, you know, I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll just watch the rest of my game because this one's over. So the LSU game ends. I was like, okay, well, let me just check on my phone and see what the score is of the Tulane game, see how bad they lost. And I was like, oh, they're down 5 and they have the ball. Okay, I'm watching this. So it turned in like right at the end when they were able to get the touchdown and all this kind of stuff. And USC just choked it away, man. A Lincoln Riley special.
I just don't get why that man can't figure out a defense ever. It doesn't make any sense. Bad. It's the same coordinator that he had with him at Oklahoma, right?
Same guy, yeah.
What are you doing, guy? Get rid of him. kick him to the curb, fire him. Like, Lincoln Riley is never going to have any success that he really wants to if he's not going to ever try and figure out the defense. Like, you can try and sit there and put up 50 points a game, and it's just not going to work. You're still going to choke away your life at the end of the season, which is exactly what happened.
Back-to-back games, so, man. Cost him. Yeah. Cost them a playoff spot, and then they lose to Tulane.
Dude, that... Freaking Tulane. How about Mississippi State, though? That was a lot of fun seeing them come out and get the dub.
That was an ugly game. You know what else was an ugly game? Kentucky and Iowa. Didn't watch a single moment of it, but, you know, when you see that two of, like, Iowa's, like, four scores were pick sixes, that's all you need to know, because it was a classic Iowa game, because...
There was no chance I was watching that game.
There's no chance. There's absolutely none whatsoever. The Tennessee-Clemson game was really fun. It seemed like Clemson was going to maybe pull something out the hat, but they just choked on the other side of the 50-yard line. And Cade Klubnik got rattled because he's a freshman, and we all saw it.
Yeah. So how did you feel about Milton?
I think they'll be okay. I think he's like super talented, obviously. I think the offseason will be really good for him knowing, hey, I'm the guy now, and him being able to get with his receivers. I mean, obviously they were missing, you know, Hyatt and Cedric Tillman. But I mean, their wide receivers still played really well. They stalled out a lot more than what you would want them to. I mean, they had their the most encouraging thing, I think, was how the defense played. That was probably the best that their defense played almost all year. And they played really well because they had to have, I mean, their offense score still like over like what, 35 points or something like that, which is usually good to win. Yeah. But for Tennessee, you usually have to score like 40, 45, maybe 50 to win most games. So to see their defense really step up was really encouraging. But I don't know, man. I mean, he kind of, he has all the physical abilities. I think it's like he has such a cannon for an arm that he has to learn touch. And that's usually the hardest kind of thing for this kind of guys. So we'll see. I don't know, man. It's still kind of really early, but they would probably definitely be a favorite for me in the East next year.
It's going to be interesting to see if he can click with the wide receivers, because I know Hyatt's already committed to the draft and so is Tillman. So you're losing your top two wide receivers. So it'll be interesting to see how he can commit. Or how he can click with the other guys coming back next year.
Yeah, it'll be. I mean, I think next year's team will still be really good. I think the defense, it has improved. So if the defense can take another step and not be so reliant on the offense, then I think there's no problems at all. They'll be just as dangerous next year for sure. Maybe not. They might not be as dangerous offensively next year as they were this year. I mean, dude, it's so hard to be that. I mean, they had Cedric Tillman and Jalen Hyatt had a monster year. And then you have an amazing quarterback in Hendon Hooker who was robbed out of a Heisman finalist spot. Just that's absolutely disgraceful. Still not over it. But yeah, I mean, you have those guys, like, it's kind of hard to repeat that. And being a guy that watched the best offense of all time, I'm speaking from experience. So, you know,
gosh, I just knew you were going to throw something like that in there.
Oh man. Okay. Let's go on to, Penn State, Utah. Did you watch much of the Rose Bowl?
I did not. I didn't get a chance to, actually, unfortunately. So you're
gonna have to carry this one. I watched the first half because then I went out with some fam for dinner during the second half. So I didn't watch the second half, but the first half was really entertaining. I mean, there was it was really kind of a defensive struggle in the first half. Both very similar teams, really evenly matched. And then I think eventually Cam Rising got knocked out of the game in the second half again for the second straight year in the Rose Bowl, which really stinks. But it seemed to be a good game. And then Penn State just kind of ran away with it at the end. But it was a Rose Bowl, you know.
Have we talked about how insane the Pac-12 quarterbacks are going to be next year?
It's going to be crazy, man. What we got? It's we got Bones coming back. We got Caleb Williams. Cam Rising, I think, is coming back. Who else we got?
Michael Penix, Michael Penix
is coming back. Didn't UCLA get a transfer, like a big-time transfer in?
I don't remember.
I think they did. Let me.
Now that you say that, I think they did. But DJ's transferring to Oregon State, too.
No.
That's going to be intense, man.
Let's see.
But I don't remember because, yeah, DTR is not coming back.
I know they hosted DJ and he obviously didn't go.
But still picking Oregon State. That's I think the big shocker was Bo Nix actually deciding to come back. Kind of glad he did, just because it's going to be make it a little bit more fun. But I was a little surprised that he actually decided to.
Yeah, I mean, that's really surprising for sure. Let me see if I can find it here for UCLA. Linebacker. They have a quarterback from Kent State coming in. I don't think that's who I was thinking about, though. I feel like there was some big name that they were looking at. Maybe not. Maybe I was mistaken. Maybe it was DJ, it might have been DJ that they were targeting, but ended up not getting. But is DTR coming back, or is he going to the draft? Do we know?
I thought he announced, but I could be wrong. I feel like he's going.
He got benched in the bowl game. That's what it was. He did get benched in the bowl game. I saw that, but yeah, I don't know, man. But yeah, it's going to be really entertaining with all those guys in the Pac-12, and maybe they'll finally get another team in the playoff since like the first one or second one or whatever. Maybe.
Nah, probably not. It's going to be the same thing. They're just all going to beat up on each other, and then everybody's going to have two losses at the end of the year.
Oh, fun times, fun times. All right, Mason, so let's go ahead and get into the semifinals, and we'll go chronologically. So let's start with and both of these games were great, by the way. If you didn't watch them, shame on you, because these were some of the best playoff games since the era started. By far, you know, this is the first time that both of them were insane. So let's go ahead and get into that, Mason. So talk to me about TCU in Michigan. TCU surprised all of us and came out and won and looked good doing it. And it was a close game. So what'd you think on it?
TCU's never say die attitude has been awesome. I was a big hater on them 2 weeks ago when we did our podcast. I didn't have any belief that they were going to come in and beat Michigan. But the fact that they just continue to make things happen. It was a lot of fun to watch. That was an exciting game, especially towards the end of it when they were just going back and forth, touchdown, 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 touchdown. It was awesome to watch. And Max Duggan, I mean, he just wins, dude.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to describe it. Like, he didn't have that great of a game, but then you look down and it's like, oh, they've got 50 points right now. What are we doing?
Yeah, he didn't, again, like you said, I mean, he didn't have like that unbelievable game that you kind of expect like a Heisman quarterback to have, but he didn't have to, which is awesome to see for them, because you feel like, at least since the Kansas State game, which, I mean, it was only one game ago, but still, you think, just based on watching that, he has to have an amazing, absolutely like killer performance if for them to win. And that wasn't really the case. Their defense stepped up that nobody thought was going to. The talk the whole time, and everybody didn't believe that, you know, and that includes myself, of, hey, you know, we're not going to be able to stop the run. You know, Michigan's going to be able to do whatever they want, and they're just going to be able to stop you, and you're not going to be able to do anything. And that wasn't the case at all. Their defense stepped up and kept them from running the ball. Michigan had to become a passing team, which after the first play, you're like, oh, here we go, right? Everybody thought after Donovan Edwards busts through the middle and almost takes it to the house, it's like, oh, well, here we go. It's about to be a wrap. And then they choke it on the goal line, basically, with these weird play calls. I mean, it was the stats for Max Duggan, 14 of 29 for 225, two touchdowns and two picks. So not amazing, but it was good enough, man. And that's really all you can ask for a guy that, like you said, all he knows how to do is win.
Yeah. The weird thing about Michigan is it felt like it was all on Jim Harbaugh. And I know he's not the one out there throwing the pick sixes, but you're on the 2 yard line, dude. Why are you going out there running a Philly special trying to get a pass to your quarterback? Like, line up and run the dang ball up the middle, because you have the best offensive line in college football. What are you doing? Why are you running some trick play right now? It didn't make any sense to me. And then also, it happens again 2 series later. You try and hand the ball off to your fullback, and you can't even get the snap down. Why are you handing it off to your fullback on the 1 yard line? That makes no sense. So I just think it's a Jim Harbaugh thing right now. But he's in his own head, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I don't know either, man. It's kind of crazy, because And listen, you're gonna hear this from people. It's like, oh, you know, the refs and all this kind of stuff. I mean, there were some very questionable calls, kind of both sides. But still, like, you have all of this talent. You like, yes, they took a touchdown off the board when it definitely looked like the guy caught the ball in the end zone. They did that, but like, you're at the 1 yard line. You have the best offensive line in the country. Just like, hand the ball off that you've done all year.
Yeah.
You know, like this isn't rocket science. This isn't like you're always in the gun and you don't know how to take a snap under center and hand the ball off. You literally do that like 50 times a game. Like, no,
that's what you're known
you
for.
Don't deserve to win when you do stuff like that. You just don't. And you don't deserve to win when you throw two pick sixes. You just don't.
I don't know, man. It just, they got away from what they're good at. And it was almost immediately, too. You have the 70-yard run right at the middle on the first play of the game. And then after that, you just try to get cute with yourself and you overthought everything. So, I don't know. I don't know where they go from here, though. You know what I mean? Like, this felt like their best team in a while. And this felt like their best chance to actually get to the national championship, and you choke it away like that. Like, I don't know where you go from there. And now there's reports coming out that if Harbaugh's offered an NFL job, he's going to take it. I just, sucks for them. Hate to see it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you do about it, because I mean, like you said, I mean, this definitely felt like if there was gonna be a year for Michigan to win it, it was gonna be this year because of how everything kind of lined up. JJ McCarthy was really coming on at the end of the year. He played really well, but you know, at the same time, man, like they just, I don't know if, like, again, this is. Just looking at the individual stats, I mean, Donovan Edwards rushed 23 times for 119 yards. I mean, that's 5 yards a carry. JJ McCarthy also ran a little bit, but whether it was they just got out of what they wanted to do or because TCU plays the 3-3-5, which they never see, and this was something they brought up on the broadcast, Michigan will never see a defense like this in the Big Ten. And, dude, that defense is tricky, man. Like, it's real tricky. If you're not used to playing it and you don't see it so often, because, I mean, LSU this season, I mean, their second game of the season wasn't against a great team, but they ran this weird defense where it's like you don't know what the numbers really are because they change it up so much and because the numbers aren't actually what you think they are because they actually have six in the box instead of, you know, four or five. It's not conventional. Their run fits are weird and all this stuff. They think like, oh, okay, I can just pass the ball because they're all right here, but they can't because they, like, it's just a weird defense that you don't see. And so I think, man, they, like, I don't want to say they look past TCU, but I don't think they expected TCU to be as physical as they were. And that was the thing that people kept talking about. TCU is a really physical team. And you don't really think of that in the Big 12, at least not in the past. And they showed it, man. They're super physical, and they can stop the run when they need to. They did it to Bijan Robinson on the road at Texas. And my thought was, hey, if they can do it to Texas and Bijan Robinson, they have at least a chance to hang with Michigan. And they showed out.
Yeah, and I think the big thing for TCU coming up next week against Georgia in the national championship is what happens with Kendre Miller. He ended up hurting his knee or whatever it was, and he wasn't able to come back. He played for like two snaps or something like that and then had to come back out. He was limping really bad. I don't think you can go in and beat Georgia without him, even though against Michigan, their backup ran crazy when he actually came in. So I think that's going to be an interesting one for me.
Yeah, I mean, Kendre Miller is a big, big loss if they can't get him back for the Georgia game. And we'll probably talk a little bit more about that after we talk about the Georgia-Ohio State game. Because, I mean, he is such a big game changer. But DeMarcado did run wild. I mean, he went 17 for 150 in a touchdown. So he averaged almost 9 yards a carry. Ooh. Like, crazy.
From a backup.
I mean, he's pretty solid for him. And I guess a really good Michigan defense. Like, the two things that everybody kept saying is that Michigan's going to be able to run all over them and their defense is good enough to stop TCU. And they weren't. I mean, I think they did pretty good pass defense, but rush defense, I mean, they just got blown open. Because, I mean, total rushing yards for as a team for TCU, they ran for 263 and averaged 6.4 yards a carry.
Dang.
It's Michigan. Michigan only ran for 186. Like,
and you're right. That's all the talk was, that TCU is not running on him. And then that's all they did, man. That's crazy.
All they did, and then they had the big plays that everybody said that they would get from Quentin Johnson and Tay Barber and Jordan Hudson, all these guys, man. Like, watch out for them, dude. Watch out. Anything else you want to talk about this one, or are you ready to go to the next one?
Let's go to the next one.
All right. So the other one was Ohio State, Georgia. And if you listen to me, I tried to call my shot right after the SEC championship game, called it there. Hey, Ohio State's going to win this game. Ohio State's going to give Georgia trouble. And they were this close. If you ever see me on camera, I literally have my arms as wide as I'll go away. This close, based on that idiotic field goal of beating Georgia. They should have had it, man. I was so mad. They had this game won, and they didn't. I think they scored 3 points in the fourth quarter.
What is it you say to always trust your kicker?
No, never trust your kicker, guys. Don't trust your kicker. And this is just exhibit 5006. Okay. I just don't understand these coaches. That's like, hey, we just need to get to the edge of our kicker's range and we're fine. Like, there's no need to keep being aggressive. And that's what killed Ohio State, man. They got to it being like a 50 yarder and they're like, hey, let's just run the ball and let's kill all the momentum we were getting in this drive instead of going for the throat and actually scoring a touchdown if we can, or getting as close as we can. No, they decided to run the ball and call a timeout. And then CJ almost got sacked and then almost screwed yourself. Like, what are you doing? And if you were watching the game, all these like little camera shots of the kicker on the sideline, he looked terrified of the moment, guys. And it's like, oh my god. And then he shanks it. It's not even close. This isn't even a competitive kick. As soon as he kicked it, everybody knew it was gonna happen. This wasn't one of these like, oh, we gotta wait, is it gonna fight like slightly move off, or is it gonna be short? No, it was immediately, it was off. Oh my gosh.
I mean, why does Ryan Day sit there and think that his college kicker could go out there and bomb a 50 yarder for the win? I mean, come on, man. You got to scratch your head at some point and just think, eh, maybe we should go for about 15 more yards. Get him in a comfortable range,
or, you know, just do something. You had two timeouts and you decide just to sit on it, man. This is where Ryan Day kills you, man. He had a great game plan until Marvin Harrison Jr. gets hurt. They were raking up yards like I thought they would. As soon as I watched LSU put up as many yards, as many points on Georgia, with our strength really not being the passing game too much, and then whenever we had a real passing quarterback, he shredded them. Listen, you go against CJ Stroud and those wide receivers are going to do the same thing except better, and that's exactly what they did. They controlled it, and they had enough of a running game to keep them honest. Jalen Carter, who is that guy? Like, nobody knows who he is because he was nowhere to be found. He had one tackle the whole game and no impact. Like, they did exactly what you have to do against Georgia right now. And, you know, it was almost enough. And we unfortunately have to hear about Stetson Bennett for another game. I am so sick and tired of seeing his face, and so sick and tired of hearing his stupid story and how great he is and how he's just, he has such a punchable face, dude. He just does. Like, can we please, somebody from TCU, just like knock him out for the natty? Like, just please. I don't care if he's like, I don't want him significantly hurt, but like just hurt just enough to where he can't actually play. Like, can we let that happen? Like, first play of the game or something.
Stetson Bennett was so much more likable when he wasn't winning.
it's so annoying. And then you get the plebs on like Twitter and stuff. It's like, why didn't this guy win the Heisman? Why didn't this guy win the Heisman? It's like, nah, dude, like, you don't know what you're watching. If you're going to say, why didn't this guy win the Heisman after watching CJ Stroud's performance, get out of here, dude. Like, no. Like, yeah, shut up.
Come on.
Okay. He didn't even deserve to be in that city. Okay. No.
CJ Stroud was out there carving up the best defense in college football and then still just had to be let down at the end of it. I mean, that was CJ Stroud's best game in Ohio State uniform. And I don't think
I mean, this is what we've all been waiting for. I mean, whenever we were talking preseason about CJ Stroud Heisman, and then whenever we were having our real, you know, big talk about it before the Michigan game, about who's going to win the Heisman, like, we were all waiting on this kind of moment, and it happened on the biggest stage for him. It didn't happen against Michigan. And then he rallied together and had a wonderful performance against the best defense in college football the past couple of years, man. And unfortunately, he came up short because his defense let him down and because his kicker sucks and his head coach is stupid for trusting him. That's what it came down to. Oh, and also, you know, this hit job that they had on Marvin Harrison Jr. in the back of the end zone. What the heck is this nonsense? Dude?
Which one was worse, the targeting, non-targeting, whatever you want to call it, that one or the one in the Michigan-TCU game? Because to me, the one at the end of the Michigan-TCU game was so much more obviously targeting. At this point, I just don't even know what targeting
is. Nobody knows what it is, but I'll say this about the one in Michigan-TCU. If you're Michigan, you don't deserve that call. That's what I was thinking the whole time. I was like, by the letter of the law, it's probably targeting. But after the crap that just happened on that play, there is no reason why you should get that call to get bailed out to have another shot.
That was such a letdown.
If they would have gotten that and then scored, like, that would have been like the most like ridiculous thing. Because, like, that's just one of those situations. Like, what do you expect the defensive player to do? He's trying to stop the momentum of the offensive player from going forward. What do you want him to do? Like, come on. I mean, obviously, the one in the Georgia-Ohio State game wasn't targeting, but, like, that's the kind of vicious hit that they're trying to get out of the game. Like, you don't want to see that, you know? So, I don't know, man. I honestly didn't really see it. I was kind of busy going back and forth doing a couple things, so I didn't really like pay attention to the replay to see if it was or wasn't at that time. So it would surprise me. And dude, if that's targeting, like, that's their nickel player and he's like super important to what they do.
Yeah.
They would have been even without Marvin Harrison, they would have been screwed.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. You're talking about Alabama not winning a national championship with Bryce Young and it being a letdown. Where are we at with the same thing with Ohio State place. And CJ Stroud? Like, you didn't even win a Big Ten championship at this point. And so this is just two straight years of nothing but letdown with potentially your best quarterback in school history. So, I mean, I don't know where you go from there either if you're both of them. Like, this bowl season almost in total has just felt like such a gut punch to the Big Ten. Like, you have your two best teams in the playoffs. And they both get beaten. And you're leaving the game not feeling good, honestly, if I'm either one of them. I feel pretty bad about both.
You have those, and then the next day, what do you have? You have LSU punking your Big Ten West champs. Punking them. Like, not even competitive, dude. Not even close. So, yeah, I mean, what's the one when you had? Like, you had Iowa against a horrible Kentucky team.
And Penn State.
Against a Utah team.
Cam Rising got knocked out,
and Utah can't win a Rose Bowl, and they also lost to Florida. And they, you know, it's Utah plays a brand of football that's good for the Pac-12, but isn't good against like all these other teams. Like, that's just kind of, that's the thing that I'm really kind of like taking away after this year is, you know, I mean, you don't beat a 500 Florida team. And the only teams you really beat are kind of softer, big, you know, Pac-12 teams. And then when you go up against a want to beat you up, run the ball defense type team in Penn State, which is basically a carbon copy of you, you then, you know, get beat down on that. So I don't know, man. I mean, you get the Rose Bowl win with Penn State, which is nice. And you get Iowa against a horrible Kentucky team, which, you know, scroll back however long, maybe a month or so ago, where I called Kentucky horrible and you like were like, no, they're not. that'll be a take that I find for us whenever we have our receipts.
I don't remember all that.
I remember it pretty vividly here. But
I claim all my bad takes. I eat them. I claim all of them. I don't remember that one. So you're definitely going to have to play me that.
I'll find it. I'll find it. I'll send it to you. But yeah, like we went from, hey, they're like, we both thought that there could be a real possibility. And I even picked it, possibility of two Big Ten teams being in the Natty, to zero.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just tough. I mean, do you feel like the committee got the top four right, though?
No, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, I do too. I think this is the first year where you can actually sit there and say that they got it right. The unfortunate thing is, I do feel like Alabama would be the second best team in the playoffs, but you can't lose two games and get in the playoffs. And so I do think that what the committee put in the playoffs is exactly what they needed and did correctly.
With how the playoffs are currently formatted, Alabama didn't deserve to be there. Are they one of the best teams when they're fully healthy? Absolutely they are. I mean, you got Bryce Young and Will Anderson, and whenever they're riding on, they can beat anybody in the country. But, I mean, there are a couple other teams that whenever they're on, they can beat anybody in the country. There are teams that are like that. But under the current format, like, Alabama didn't have a leg to stand on. They didn't have a marquee win, and the two marquee teams that they played, they lost to. And so could they beat any of the four teams in the playoff? Yeah, but that's not the conversation we're having. Like, that's not the discussion.
Exactly.
The discussion is who are the four best and who deserve it. And these were the four that actually deserved it. When we get to the 12-team playoff in a couple of years, the conversation is going to change, and rightfully so. Alabama is obviously going to be in, and they're going to have a chance to win it on the field, which is what we're all asking for. Well, maybe not all of us, you know, Puritans, you know, aren't idiots. You know, if they had their way, TCU wouldn't even have a chance to play for a championship. But, you know, playoffs are bad and you know, bowl games and garbage. So, but
I think they actually showed it too on the field. Mm-hmm. Like the two games were both great games. And I honestly can't remember a playoff in the past, like five or six years since it started, that both games have actually been really good. There's always one blowout, and then the other one it's an okay game, or it'll be a blowout. Like, this has been the first time where both games were both awesome games. So I do feel like they got the top.
Yeah, usually it's one game is really good, and then the other one is not so good. I mean, you think in 2019, LSU and Oklahoma was a blowout, but then the Clemson-Ohio State game was a great game. I mean, it came down to the end, and you think, what was it last year? There weren't really both of them weren't Cincinnati. Great games. So that was one of the few times where one of the games wasn't great. But that year was the year's like, hey, there's obviously two ones. Like, it's obviously 1A, 1B. We'll figure it out. Man, now that you're talking about this, I want to bring up a lot of the past ones. Alabama, Ohio State. That was a really good one, the first one. And even the Natty wasn't as good. The Florida State Oregon game that year, I think, ended up being a blowout, but it was still kind of entertaining. You know, I think it kind of got away from them at the end. But I mean, this was the season. Like, as we were sitting here watching the season play out, this has been the closest comparison to the 2007 season that we've had, because it's been so chaotic. I mean, obviously, like, there's been the teams that have been consistent. Like, Georgia's been like, oh, everybody's wanting to crown Georgia. But at the same time, man, like, anybody could beat them. Anybody could beat them. And, you know, we've seen that. Everybody was ready to crown or ready to prep for Michigan and Georgia and the national championship. Well, guess what? They're not. Because, you know, they lost. So
yeah. And I think the interesting thing is, like, it felt like that was one of the knocks against the 12-team playoff, was the fact that there have been so many blowouts in the semifinals. And so why do you want to stretch that out? And then it's just like, we come in and you just get nothing but awesome games so far in the playoffs this year. And so it's all coming together for us in our 12-team playoff.
Yeah, it is. I mean, like, listen, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, all the games have been great, because, I mean, they haven't been. I mean, you think of the marquee games and the playoff, what games do you think of? You think of in the first year, you obviously think Ohio State and Alabama. You think of Georgia and Oklahoma. The Rose Bowl was a wonderful game. You think just thinking semifinals. I mean, I'm just kind of going down the list here. There aren't a ton of them, right? but when you get them, they're memorable. And I think part of this is also like, it's the conversation is, oh, why do you want more blowouts? Like, that's all it's going to be. Like, no, it's not. Like whenever you're expanding it to 12, like the top teams are obviously going to rise, but like you have all these, like there's no way that every single game that a 12 team playoff is going to be what has been the 14, because you're going to get competitive games. And obviously the best teams are going to make it to the semifinals, to where the semifinals will actually always be good. Like, you might get these outliers, but like,
yeah, I agree.
Who's to say that in some of these playoff years that an Oklahoma was actually better than 5, 6, or 7, whatever the rankings ended up being, or Notre Dame, the year that they got in and got blown out by Clemson, or, you know, whatever, that year that Clemson had Kelly as their quarterback, whatever is, I forget what his first name was, but I mean, everybody knew like Clemson wasn't going to go up against Bama and beat them because their style of play fell right into Bama's trap. But who's to say like one of the other teams that are ranked behind them wasn't actually better or got hot or whatever. And again, we're making it to where you earn it on the field, you win your conference, you get to play for a championship, which is how it should always be. And we can go on and keep beating a dead horse on this, because we talked about it a lot so far this season, and it's probably just going to ramp up in the offseason and next season and everything. But again, man, like if we're going to call these the Power Five champs, like these are the best conferences in America, these are the best teams and the best conferences, you get an auto bid, you deserve to play for a championship. And I'm really looking forward to that being the case. And I think also this year is also showing, like, this is really kind of the first, well, it's the second, but it's really where you're seeing the transfer portal and NIL stuff really kind of starting to take place, which seems to be kind of creating some parity, maybe not in the way that we like think. Like, we all thought, oh, all the best players are going to the best teams. It's just going to be still two teams or whatever, because that's where everybody's going to go. That kind of happened. But at the same time, when you have TCU be unranked, make it to the Natty and have a good bit of transfers, first year coach, when you have an LSU team, which had tons of transfers because their roster wasn't in the right spot, they go win the SEC West. Like this is actual parity. And obviously, like, we'll talk in the offseason on what's going wrong with college football and what needs to change. But man, like, I think the sport is in a really good spot with how the end of the season is going to be with the playoff coming up. And I think this is just an example. And it's just going to keep going, because the dynasty right now of Alabama is kind of on the low. I mean, they're still there. Like, they're still top, but they're not as dominant as how it's been since 2010. Georgia maybe could get there, but still, like, who's going to play quarterback for Georgia next year?
Yeah.
Nobody freaking knows, right?
You're going to find another 26-year-old to come and
yeah,
throw the ball to everybody? I don't think so.
I know I just talked a lot there. So go off and what else do you have to say? I mean, any kind of follow-up thoughts on that?
No, but so the one what I was kind of wanted to talk about more was like how good the New Year's Six Bowls have been this year as to why like a 12-team playoff will work, in my opinion. Like, if you look at all of the big bowl games this year, only one of them has been a blowout, if we're being honest. Like, it was Alabama, Kansas State. That was only one. If you look at the Rose Bowl, it was still a good game, even though before Cam Rising went out. And then you have USC Tulane, Clemson, Tennessee, and then like the two semifinal games. Like, every single New Year's Six Bowl was a good game. And that would be like kind of your format for a 12-team playoff.
Yeah. So yeah,
that's
yeah,
kind of where absolutely. I was going with it when I was saying like it was absolutely. All good games.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, going back to all of them as a whole was definitely really good. And like you said, man, I mean, like the Kansas State Bama game was a good game until it just got out of hand, you know, third quarter because of what Nick Saban is known to do with these, you know, whatever. And does Kansas State maybe act a little different if it's like an actual, you know, Natty format? And honestly, you know, that was a neutral site game. Is it different at all if they're playing in Manhattan? Maybe. I don't know if it is. I mean, Bama struggled on the road the past couple of years. Is it different? Could be. I don't know. Maybe not. But there's still that chance. And listen, you want to go see, just kind of thinking some of these bowl games being at home, you want to go see, you know, Utah and Penn State play at Happy Valley or in Utah? See what that atmosphere is like, or USC going to Tulane or Tulane going to USC or however that would work, how interesting that would be. Like, I think it would be great. Like you said, I mean, all these games would be awesome.
I can't wait. Bring it on.
Okay, so we talked a lot about semifinals there. So now we have our national championship set, Mason. We have Georgia and TCU. Kind of what are your kind of first kind of impressions as we're going to kind of talk through this a little bit on a preview, and then we'll eventually get to a pick at the end, but let's kind of spend a good bit of time talking about the Natty here coming up on the ninth.
My first thought is that I'm terrified to commit to TCU because I don't want to jinx them. I don't want to put our curse on TCU, which is going to be really unfortunate if that happens again. But I will say, this game is going to depend on Max Duggan a lot. Like, the thing against Michigan, like, they were able to include their running backs. Like you said, their backup went for 150, and they were able to, like, get it done on the run, on the ground. You're not doing that against Georgia. You're not actually doing that against Georgia this time. You can say the whole Michigan thing, oh, they're not going to run on Michigan, and then they do. That's not happening against Georgia. You beat Georgia through the air. So it's going to rely on Max Duggan a lot. And if my guy Quentin Johnson can get going again, it'll be interesting. But I don't know if they're going to be able to have the firepower to actually compete with Georgia, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, so a big thing in this is going to be the health of Kendre Miller. I mean, that's a big, big piece of theirs that he's been out with the knee since the game. He's been listed as questionable. Sonny Dykes, I think, had some media availability today and said, hey, you know, we're not sure. He's kind of questionable. We'll just have to wait and see how it goes the rest of the week. With it being a knee, you don't really feel too hopeful on that because, you know, knee injuries can usually be pretty serious and usually take weeks. And so that might not help. But if there's any kind of benefit for TCU is that Georgia's been hit with the injury bug in the last game. Darnell Washington, their big-time tight end, he's listed as questionable. He has an ankle and I think maybe some stretched or strained ligaments or something in his ankle. So, like, I wouldn't expect him to play. They lost some of their defensive ends due to injury. So they might be on, like, third, fourth, and fifth string at defensive end. So that doesn't help on pass rush, which they really aren't that great at pass rush anyways. So, you know, it's going to be, and even going back to their wide receiver, McConkey, I mean, he was obviously limited against Ohio State with his knee. I mean, he's not 100%. I mean, he's been a big target. The good thing is that they got AD Mitchell back, who's electric. But even still, man, you got to have more than just him out there. Brock Bowers didn't really have that big of a game. So, you know, TCU plays a weird defense. They've played some really good teams. So, you know, The injury thing is kind of big for Georgia, I think, too, because some of their main key players, especially on defense, when you're going to play a team like TCU, who likes to spread it out and run and have their big chunk plays, when you don't have normal pass rushers, it's going to be hard for you to just sit back and eight and hope a pass rush gets home, because it obviously wasn't there for you for Ohio State, and Ohio State couldn't score the ball against Michigan, and TCU was able to run the ball and get the big plays against Michigan. So I think that kind of leans TCU a little bit. But like you said, man, it's going to come down to Max Duggan. Can he have a really solid game to end his career? And this is what he wants. And you saw it at the post-game press conference after they lost the Big 12 championship. He wants to bring TCU a championship. He's the kind of kid to do it. He's going to be the Stetson Bennett story of last year. He's way more likable than Stetson is. Okay. But yeah, he's the same type of story. He was benched and all this kind of stuff and came out. He was a Heisman finalist and he's trying to lead his team to a championship. And I think he has a pretty good way to do it. I think a lot of people are thinking this is going to be a blowout. Mason, do you think it's going to be a blowout? The line right now is at 12.5.
The thing is, I can't commit to a blowout just because of, like I was saying earlier, like TCU's mindset right now of just never say die. You can't count them out of a game right now with the amount of times that they've come back from double digits or a touchdown deficit, like throughout the season. I can't sit there and say it's going to be a blowout. If you're TCU and you're wanting to win this game, you can't rely on that attitude. Like, you have to come out and you actually have to punch Georgia in the mouth and you actually have to beat them. You can't just sit back and say, well, you know, second half, here we go. Time to win the game, blah, blah, blah. Now you have to come out. You're going to have to put up four quarters, and you're going to have to do your thing and actually win the game instead of just sitting back and waiting for it.
I mean, they had to play like they did against Michigan. I mean, that's what everybody was saying, and they came out and pushed Michigan in the mouth and made Michigan play their game. And I think another thing that's going to help TCU is that this game isn't in Atlanta, okay? Georgia's de facto home games in these big games is officially over, okay? When you get your best teams that you play at home all season long, you don't know what you are on the road. You get Oregon basically at home in Atlanta, okay? You get Tennessee at home. You get LSU basically at home in Atlanta. And you get Ohio State at home. And Ohio State had you beat. And you came back and won. But they had you beat, man. Like, you had the energy of that crowd pull you through. Now you're going to L.A., okay, I can guarantee you, because this is TCU's first time in a natty since like 38 or something like that, like they are going to show up and they're going to buy tickets. This isn't going to be some de facto home game for you like you try and make some of these road games to be when you're not in Atlanta. So I think that's going to be a big thing because, I mean, you've seen it with Bama. Bama's a super talented team. On the road, they've struggled, man. And what's another game that Georgia struggled on? Missouri. The farthest they've gone from home, and they play Missouri, and they play garbage. Now, whether that's them overlooking them, I don't care about that excuse. You go on the road, it's hard to win. And when you're playing a team like TCU, never say die mentality. They all, like, this is their first bowl game was in the semifinals. They're super hungry and wanting to win. They have an innovative, explosive offense and a defense that gets stops when it needs to. Man, like, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, Mason. Like, everybody's just saying, oh, Georgia's going to blow it out. And that might happen, man. But I'm sitting here right now. Everybody's been crowning Georgia. They've been crowning them this whole time. And they've been doubting TCU this whole time, us included. They've been doubting them. And this is the spot where this is where teams like this thrive. It's where they thrive, man.
Yeah. And I think we'll know pretty quickly, too, in the game, because I don't think Georgia will take their foot off the gas in the game if it's going their way. So, like, if Georgia comes out and they actually put up two quick touchdowns, I think the game's going to be over quickly. With that being said, I don't think it's going to happen, man. Like, I'm starting to drink the Kool-Aid, too, like you were saying. So, it's going to be fun. I'm actually getting pretty excited. I think sitting here and doubting TCU as much as everybody has been is going to give them some fuel to light the fire and actually come out and put on a show. So I think it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it more now than I was like 3 days ago. Right after they won, I was a little bummed out. But
Listen, by the time I talk to you on Sunday, you're gonna be like fully like dicked out. Yeah. You're gonna have like your TCU shirt and like the frogs and everything.
I'll get my Hitting the Toes shirt. Oh, I can't wait. That's all I needed, guys.
Whenever you looked at the stats going into the Ohio State game, one thing that kind of stood out to me was the strength of schedule rank between them. Ohio State actually had a higher strength of schedule than Georgia. How crazy is that? How crazy is it that, and we hear all the SEC hype. And I really could care less about it. I don't know how you feel about it. That's a good off-season topic. We'll talk about SEC and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, Georgia didn't have that super hard of a schedule, man. Like, they just haven't. They haven't really been tested. They finally got tested against Ohio State, but thinking defensively being tested, I mean, who on this list at the time that they played them would you say, besides Tennessee, was a legit offensive threat to them? Okay, we got Oregon to start off the year. At that time, when nobody really knew what Oregon was, Oregon didn't know what they were. Okay, maybe you can give it to them. Maybe Samford. South Carolina wasn't where they were. They were still playing super conservative. Kent State, they gave up 22-2, by the way. Missouri, Auburn, Vanderbilt, Florida. And then they get Tennessee at home, which they showed out, only gave up 13 points. I think also part of that was the game was too big for Tennessee, too. You know, that was after Bama and everything.
Yeah, way too
after big that, they play Mississippi State. which at that time Mississippi State wasn't playing well, Kentucky, who is awful, and Georgia Tech. And then after that, they gave up 30 to LSU.
It's not there.
Most to a backup quarterback. And then they gave up, what was it, 41 or something? 40, what was it, 42 or something? What was the score of that game? Oh, my gosh.
I think it was 42-41.
42-41. They give up 41 to Ohio State. So, I mean, like, that schedule. Like, we can talk about SEC is tough. Yeah. That SEC is not tough. It's not tough.
Get that out of here, man. That's probably like, that was probably legitimately four of the bottom five teams in the SEC this year.
Their schedule is just between
Auburn, Missouri, garbage. Vandy.
South Carolina at the beginning of the year, Mason, was a bad football team.
They were
a bad football team. Missouri, bad football team.
And then you got Kentucky.
You got Kentucky, who is also a bad football team. Like, the best teams they played, I mean, the one, like, here's the, like, the things that people are like, oh, this Georgia team is the best, is the blowout against Oregon, which I can understand, but still, Oregon wasn't there yet. It was first game of the season, okay? Tennessee was pretty impressive. Other than that, like, whoop-de-doo, you scored 45 against Mississippi State. Who cares? You know?
Yeah.
So, and the whole reason I bring this up is because when they play legit talent, legit players on offense, more times than not, they've given up points and it's been a close game. It wasn't close against LSU, but they gave up 30 points. Should have lost to Ohio State. They didn't have the best offensive day against Tennessee, whether you want to say, oh, they were just holding on the ball, so they didn't give Tennessee. No, man. Like, Tennessee's defense played really well. You only scored 27. You're not beating TCU by scoring 27 points. And I would also say that TCU's defense is better than Ohio State's. Ohio State's defense is bad. they are very good.
Oh, yeah, they're
okay. And you still almost lost to them. So, everybody's wanting to crown Georgia and claim them as the next dynasty and the next Alabama and all this stuff. And I'm just sitting here, man, like I said at the beginning of the season, and it's probably going to be a bad take because I'm probably, you know, screwing TCU over with these takes that I'm making. But like until they actually do it, I'm just not going to believe it, man. I'm just not going to buy in to Georgia being the next player when they have consistently choked in these situations and they honestly haven't had a hard schedule at all. I'm just not going to believe it yet.
Yeah. And I think the thing is, like, I feel like you have to have a generational guy, and I just don't feel like
you have Stetson right Bennett, man.
I mean, like, last year, their defense. Oh,
they have Stetson Bennett. I forgot Bennett, about. Man.
Old Jesus over there. But I mean, like last year they had to absolutely ride that
and
defense.
They did it with and they Alabama have to ride their missing defense the two again best this year. Wide receivers getting hurt. That's how they won. Hey, Mason, they won because, you know, Mechie and Jameson Williams got ACLs. So
I'm gonna have to go take another depression shower.
So
But go no, ahead, like, like I was saying, like you have to ride your defense this year, and I don't quite feel like your defense is up to par as it was last year. So that leaves room for a underdog story like Max Duggan to come in and actually do his thing.
Who is Georgia going to hurt?
Who knows, man?
Where's the hit list on this one?
Can we just put a safety bubble around Quentin Johnson, please?
Please. Listen, they're going to get down two scores, and then they're going to do everything they can to hurt like the best players for TCU so they can come back. That's what's going to happen. That's what's happened against Alabama. It happened against Ohio State. You know, what's going to happen this time? They did it to Jaden Daniels, you know, like.
Protect your wide receivers, TCU. Protect all of them.
Oh, man. So, Mason, we've kind of belabored it probably enough that we actually can. So let's go ahead and get some picks. Obviously, we're still picking against the spread. Spread is 12.5. What is your pick?
I am going to take TCU against the spread I do think Georgia's going to end up winning the game, but I don't think it's going to be a 12-point game. Sorry. But I am taking TCU against
the spread. We were all in, Mason. What happened?
I still got three more days to be all in. Or not three, what, six?
Something like that.
Six
more days. We still have a week.
We're good. I got some time.
Going TCU, but Georgia to win. I am also going to go TCU against the spread. And you know what? I'm going to do it, Mason. TCU is gonna win national championship. I'm a believer in Max Duggan. I'm a believer in Quentin Johnston. He's gonna look great on my fantasy team, by the way, Mason.
You're not gonna get him. Take him. Actually, please take him.
You really want me to take him? So that way you can get Gibbs and Robinson. So I know what you're trying to do here. Yeah, I know what you're trying to do.
Take him.
No, I believe in. I honestly think they're deep. What got me convinced. If you would have told me that, hey, TCU is going to beat Michigan before even watching the games, and then they're going to play Georgia in the national championship, I would have just told you straight then, you know, 2 weeks ago when we had the podcast, oh, Georgia's going to win. The way, to me, it was the way TCU won the game against Michigan. That's what convinced me. The way that they play defense, were able to stop, like, that's a really good Michigan run team. And whether it was they just schemed them out or because they were so physical, they stopped it. They stopped the run. And that's what Georgia likes to do. They like to run the football. Here's the thing what Georgia does, Mason. Here's what they do. They come out passing the football to surprise you. Like, oh, this Georgia's going to run the ball. Georgia's going to run the ball. They come out passing, and then after they pass the ball for like two straight drives, and then they go to run the football. That's what they do every single game. That's the game plan. Every single time. Their game plan is that. Their game plan is all this misdirection crap that they do and the ends arounds and the tunnel screens. It's a super like simple stuff that they're doing that just like they're not just saying, hey, my guy's better than your guy, we're going to beat you. They're like, hey, we're just going to do all this misdirection stuff. That way you don't know what to do. TCU has a defense that's built on stopping those kinds of offenses. The kinds of offenses that the 3-3-5 is built is the spread. And this is what Georgia's doing. They're running spread concepts and then run power football. The 3-3-5 and the way that they've been playing it is built to defend those kind of offenses. I'm not saying they're going to shut them out, but I think they're going to have a better time. If Ohio State can stop that Georgia offense, this TCU team can. And that's what I'm going to believe. I think their defensive line is good enough to hold up, and their linebackers are physical enough to stop the run. They have the Thorpe Award winner on the outside to lock up A.D. Mitchell. They have really good players that nobody's heard of. Their defensive backs, they might get called for a lot of pass interference like Georgia does. They're the same type there where they're handsy, but they're playing the game of, hey, we're going to have to go all the way down the field, and then they buckle up and stop them in the red zone. And Georgia really isn't that great in the red zone either, if you watch recently. They struggle there. And then I think, again, they have the type of offense that's going to give Georgia trouble. Whenever Kirby was at Alabama, what's the kind of offense that they struggled against? Mobile quarterback,
yeah, running quarterback concepts.
And this is exactly what it is. You got a Heisman runner-up. If Kendre Miller can't play, you still have a really good backup running back that still torched Michigan. And you got a star wide receiver on the edge that can win one-on-one against anybody that Georgia has, because Georgia's secondary isn't that great. With that, all that, TCU wins, and I'm going to call they win by a field goal. I'm going to call walk-off field goal Baylor style against Georgia to win the Natty. This is the one time that we will trust the kicker here, is based on that one circumstance, guys. So I'm going TCU. Go Frogs. Please win. We don't need Georgia and Kirby Smart to win another one. That way, then all their players can then go in the portal. Okay, let's just do it, okay?
Well, you've officially convinced me to buy a Hypnotoad
shirt.
That's
all it took.
Why not?
Any final words before National Championship Day and before the offseason officially begins?
It is unfortunate that the season is pretty much over. We've got a long journey of offseason ahead of us, so that's pretty sad.
It's been an awesome season, Mason. Yeah. And again, We're going to change to going every month so far with the podcast. So our next podcast will be coming out on the 1st of February, and that's going to be our season recap. So look forward to that. We're going to be going over all the takes that we had, bring up some past takes. We're going to have some clips for you guys. We're going to react to them. And then we're just going to give our thoughts overall on this season. This, Mason, again, like we said, this is an awesome season. It was so fun. We haven't had a season like this in a while. And man, yeah, we were spoiled for sure.
We were, man. It was a lot of fun. Hopefully,
I think it's just going to get better from here, especially when the playoff comes in 2 years, man. I'm really looking forward to it. All right, guys. So with all that said, we appreciate you again for listening, and we will catch you on the next one.